About a month ago, I was in a panic because every year we want to bring somebody special to the community to be able to share words of Torah at this Yom Iyun. And I reached out to Rabbi Penner, who was vacationing in Israel, and knowing Rabbi Penner, it wasn't much of a vacation, but it was definitely in Israel. And he said, "I was just here last year, you sure?" I said, "Oh," and then I told him, "Well, Margaret thinks it's a really good idea." Rabbi Penner and I went back and forth a couple of times by email, and he agreed to be able to join us today, forgetting one simple fact that he mentioned to me now, that he forgot that last night was Slichos and he would be at Yeshiva till 2:30 in the morning before he got to catch an early morning flight to get to Chicago. So I want to thank Rabbi Penner in an extra fashion and in the spirit of the season to also ask Slicha for that. Rabbi Penner is one of the great leaders in American Jewry today, serving in a key function at Yeshiva as the Dean of Reitz, the person who oversees all of the Yeshiva of Yeshiva University. He is a scholar, he is an educator, he is a communicator. He also is coming on the program in a perfect position since he followed his predecessor, Rabbi Reis, and now he gets to follow his predecessor once again. But most importantly, Rabbi Penner is one of those people whose warmth and caring for the Jewish people have truly made a difference in our world. And I am very, very honored to consider Rabbi Penner a friend and that he agreed to come today. And I don't want to take any more of his time, so without any further ado, Rabbi Menachem Penner.
Thank you very much. It is a pleasure to be able to speak here. First of all, to be able to speak at Mizrahi. I tell people that I'm going to speak at Mizrahi. It really is a credit to Rabbi Eisenberg and others. In New York, I don't think there is an equivalent. And that's an amazing thing. It's a sad thing. But the fact that Mizrahi is alive here and well, and it's such an important institution, it's wonderful to be able to be here and to be able to celebrate together. I was actually vacationing a little because Baruch Hashem got our first kids and grandkids to Eretz Yisrael. Mirza Hashem Viter, they should all make it there. Also, I have to admit, I really can't say no to the Matankis. I have a very special place in my heart for both Rabbi and the Rebbetzin, and it is really my honor to be able to be here with you and to be able to speak at this event and to play this small role in your family. And it is really my pleasure to be here. I do apologize if I actually fall asleep in the middle of my speech. I was actually in YU for Shabbos as well. If any of you were students at YU, it's hard to imagine what Shabbos is like in YU. I was there for about 10 years at YU. I stayed in for Shabbos one time in 10 years. And I really didn't stay. I was at a Yachad Shabbaton at Mount Sinai, and I just stayed in the dorm room. And already starting at the time of Rabbi Reis, Shabbos just made a huge turnaround. It is so incredibly powerful, the Tish, the Shel Shudis. It was an unbelievable Shabbos. I'm on such a high. And to have been there for Slichos last night, you just felt the walls of the Beis Medrash shaking. It is an amazing, amazing experience, Baruch Hashem. Rabbi Reis spoke about a clock for commitments, a clock for taking things on. And that's really what this time is. It's a unique opportunity this time of year to try to figure out, what are we going to change? What are we going to do? What changes? What things are we going to do? The fact is, we could do this any time, but we don't. The Jewish year makes sense. There are times where we're told to focus on certain things. It's already from the Torah. It's not really just from the rabbis. The idea that there's a Yom Kippur. Really, the Gemara discusses in Rosh Hashanah that the judgment maybe occurs every day. Why does God need a Yom Kippur? I understand the IRS can only manage dealing with the flood of reports once a year, but the Ribono Shel Olam doesn't need a once a year thing to do our judgment. Well, we need that. The way He created us, we can't spend every moment of our time focused on tshuva.
The Jewish year is a diet, a spiritual diet. We need a certain amount of this and a certain amount of that. If Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur come once a year, then what the Ribono Shel Olam is telling us is that He made us in a way that the changes that we make through this once a year push are enough, can be enough for the whole year. Otherwise, there would have been a Rosh Hashanah and a Yom Kippur in the spring. By the fact that the days of tshuva are limited to this period, it means that if done correctly, this can be the booster shot. This can be that rocket that propels us for the entire year if we use it correctly. And we also believe that the Ribono Shel Olam gives us special help at this time of the year. And it's, you can't, doing tshuva on the day after Yom Kippur, right? A cynic could certainly say, come on, what's the difference? I'll do tshuva the day after Yom Kippur. The mad rush to say Ne'ilah and to finish all the tefillos and to scream out to the Ribono Shel Olam just before the gates close. A cynic could certainly say, ah, come on, what gates? What close? But that's the way that God decided to create the world. Not every moment in the year is the same. There are deadlines, and we need deadlines. We don't function well without deadlines. The reality is, if we do tshuva any time, we won't do tshuva at all. If every day was Yom Kippur, every day was Rosh Hashanah, we would not really focus. So there's something about this time period that is healthy for us, and we believe God gives us help. We have to use this time well. It started last night. I said to the students in yeshiva yesterday at Shalashudas, it's almost like a roller coaster that's going up, 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 up. And I said at midnight tonight, midnight halacha time, 12:55, that's when we turn the corner. And then it's just a mad rush through Yom Kippur, through Hoshana Rabbah. We're already in that. What do we do? In yesterday's parsha, we have the very interesting speech that's given to a person, to a farmer who comes with their first fruits. Person comes with their first fruits, they want to thank Hashem for their bikurim. And they come, it's their first year doing it, let's say, and they come to the Beis HaMikdash, and they come and the guy says, I actually wrote my own poem for this moment. I wrote a poem, it's actually a haiku, and I wrote a poem and I'm going to be thanking God for this particular grape that I got. And the Kohen says, no, we already have a script for you. He says, I don't want a script. I wrote this poem. He says, you could say your poem. But at the end of the day, there's something called Mikra Bikurim. I said, okay, if I take off my jacket in Chicago, that's okay. Okay, it's called Mikra Bikurim. And you have to say this particular text. And what does the text say? Arami Oved Avi Vayered Mitzrayim. My father was a wandering Aramean, and what does that have to do with my grape, Mr. Kohen? Seriously? What is this, the Seder? What am I doing here? I came to thank Hashem for this grape. Why do I have to mention Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's very, very strange. I go back to Yetzias Mitzrayim? It's true. It's true that it is true that God took us out of Egypt. But what does that have to do with this? I got such a nice poem. Can't I say my poem now? So the Kohen turns to the fellow and says, you know, very nice grape. That's an impressive looking grape. Where did it come from? He said, well, it came from my field. Where'd you get that field from? I don't know. It was my father's. When my father passed away, I inherited the field. And where did your father get it from? I guess he got it from his father. And where did they get it from? Well, I guess God gave it to my family when they apportioned the land of Israel. When did they do that? After they got, Egypt. Wait a minute. You see, the fellow comes and wants to thank God for the grape. But the Kohen, the text pushes the farmer to think more broadly about what there is to thank for. I really do want to say, the text didn't get me to the Beit HaMikdash. A genuine sense of Hakaras HaTov brought me to the Beit HaMikdash.
I want to thank God for this grape. And we say, that's a nice trigger. Now take a step back and think about everything you're supposed to be thankful for. You have that grape because you have a field. You have a field because God, you should have been a slave in Egypt. You shouldn't have a grape. You shouldn't have a field. Texts cause us to think broadly about what we should be saying to God. Every time we're given a text, whether it's the text of the Shemoneh Esrei, whether it's the text of Sheva Brachas, I said this to our Torah, the Sheva Brachas, I challenged the crowd and I said, how many of the Sheva Brachas have anything to do with a wedding? The last two. There's five others. You thank God for creating man. True. Irrelevant. What does it have to do? We're sitting here with a chassan and kala. Why are we talking about masa brachos? It's the same thing. Every time we're given a text by the rabbis or by the Torah, Mikra Bikurim is the biblical model that says that when you want to thank God, you do. You honestly want to thank Him. Let's give you some help about what you should include. When you want to ask God for things, how many of the 13 middle brachot would I have said if I wasn't given the text? How many of them would I would have prayed for Parnosa, I would have prayed for good health. I would not have prayed for the restoration of judges. Certainly not at the early minion. Certainly not at the early minion in New York before I get on the Cross Bronx Expressway. I am not concerned about the restoration of judges at the 620 minion when I have to still get over to YU. The text pushes us to think differently. That's why we need it. And the more text, the more minhag, the harder it must be to figure out what it is that we're supposed to be doing. Last year we spoke about Avelus. We pointed out that Avelus is filled with customs. Every move, I can't breathe without either checking with Rabbi Vitanki or the Rabbi Lamb book. I can't do anything during the week of Avelus. Why? Because obviously whatever that week is for is very hard to accomplish. Whatever I should be doing, I need a lot of script. I need a lot of script at the Seder. Seder is called Seder. It's order. Whatever the message is, it's not for now, of the Pesach Seder, whatever it is I'm supposed to be giving to the next generation, it's not easy to transmit. So the rabbi said, we're going to script it for you. We're going to use sounds, and we're going to use tastes, and we're going to use songs. We're going to somehow use multimedia, because whatever it is really tough to do. What about tshuva? Where is tshuva scripted? So on the one hand, the rabbis have given us a lot of things to work with. We've been blowing shofar for a bunch of weeks. And we have Elul. And last night, the Ashkenazim started to say Slichos. The Sfaradim are way ahead of us. Sfaradim already are so holy by this point. They've been saying Slichos for weeks. We have Rosh Hashanah, we have Yom Kippur, we have Tashlich, we have Kaparos. We have so many different kinds of things. But that's not tshuva. Tshuva is not Rosh Hashanah, it's not Yom Kippur, it's not Elul, that's not tshuva. Those are things that are supposed to inspire us to do tshuva. But that's not tshuva. And I would dare say that sometimes they actually get in the way. I don't mean to criticize Chazal. But the way it works out, sometimes they actually get in the way. I have to admit, Eschat Da'ay Ani Mazkir Hayom, I'm not a Slichas guy. First night of Slichas, ugh, it's gewaltig. Have a few cups of coffee after Shabbos last night, ugh, I'm wired. But I start to lose it sometime, probably between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. I'm so exhausted. I'm so exhausted. And you know what? I'm so busy doing all of the things that I'm supposed to do at this time of year that I can forget to do tshuva. There's a famous story of the Chafetz Chaim sitting outside of the shul. between Mincha and Ne'ilah. And he was sitting off on the side, and they asked him, you never know what these stories mean, but they asked him, what is it that he's doing outside there? And he said, with all the davening on Yom Kippur, I didn't have a chance to do tshuva. There's only a few minutes left of Yom Kippur, I better do tshuva. See, tshuva can't be scripted. It can be inspired, but it can't be scripted. Because tshuva is something that goes on inside of me. It's a commitment. It's a decision to change. Even vidui and the discussions of whether vidui is the mitzvah or not, it may be that the commandment is to do the actions, but at the end of the day, we're supposed to be doing tshuva. When? When do we do tshuva? When do we think about it? The parshiyos that we're in the middle of have very interesting names. Rav Amiel was a rav in Antwerp. He was good enough that in 1935 there was a tryout, a famous tryout to be the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv. And it sounds like the beginning of a joke, but it was Rav Amiel, it was Rabbi Soloveitchik, and Rav Herzog. And Rav Amiel won. That's impressive. They were concerned about Rabbi Soloveitchik because they didn't think he was Zionistic enough. Soloveitchiks were actually very anti at the time. Turned out that, who knew? So Rav Amiel is a beauty. He says such beautiful things in his Svarim, beautiful poetic imagery. He says that if you listen to the names of the parshiyos now, they work very well for what the tshuva process has to be. We have Kiseitse, we go out for the summer. We have Kisavo, this is it, Labor Day weekend, it works out perfectly. Now everybody's back in shul. Kiseitse, they go out, Kisavo, they come back to shul. Nitzavim, Vayelech. Nitzavim, you stand, Vayelech, we walk. You go out for the summer, somehow the Torah recognizes the concept of summer. It didn't make Rosh Hashanah in July. This year, it's almost a little too early for us. But it recognized there's going to be like a time off for a while. Go to camp, enjoy, take off a little time in the summer, come back, and then run, walk into the tshuva process. But before you can walk, you have to stand for a minute. An amazing thing that we can learn by watching a little child. Baruch Hashem, I have a grandson who's just at this moment. You gotta stand before you can walk. So many of us run into the tshuva process. We run. We're excited about it. We're on the roller coaster. That's it. Slichas, this is great. We're gonna do it. But we didn't stand for 5 minutes and say, what are we going to change? The most important moment in this whole tshuva period is not the moment that I stand in shul. Because ne'ilah, as powerful as it is only something which can get us to keep the commitments that we made in 5 minutes alone. I try to use the night of slichas. Because what are you really going to do between the end of Shabbos and Slichas? You feel bad to have fun that night. What are you really going to do? My goal is to take 5 minutes last night in the dark and think, what am I going to change this year? That sets the groundwork for everything that comes out. But without that, if I skip that, if I skip the tshuva and just go right into the year, right into the tshuva process, then I'm not reinforcing it. The heart of tshuva is to figure out what needs to be changed. What is it that I'm going to accomplish this year? Everything else can literally get in the way unless I decide what it is that I should do. So how do I decide? What should my priorities be? The Dubna Magid tells a fascinating parable, uses a fascinating parable. It's a parable of a villager who comes to the big town, and he has all these wares, all these things that he's selling, and this particular day he has an incredible day. He sells everything that he brought from home. And he's literally holding gold coins. He can't believe exactly how much money that he made, and he's feeling really big about himself. So he says, you know what I'm going to do? I'm a big shot now. I'm not a villager anymore. I'm going to go buy a suit. So this guy comes with his dirty, muddy boots and his big coat, and he comes in, his big lambskin coat, and he comes in and he says, excuse me, comes into the tailor, I'd like to buy a suit. Look at that. What are you going to do with a suit? But you know what? The guy's holding gold coins, so don't ask too many questions. Okay, you want a suit? We can do this for you. You got the money you want to pay, we'll give you a suit. So he says, how do I buy a suit? He says, well, you know, you gotta, he says, I never had a suit before, I have no idea. Just, you know what, give me something that might fit, and we'll take it from there. So he says, okay. He hands him a particular suit, and he heads to the back. He says, try this on, and then we'll do some tailoring. And suddenly another person comes in the front door, so he says, you know what, I'm gonna take care of the customer in the front. You go back and you put on the suit. So he's talking to this other customer, the tailor, and he starts hearing very bad sounds from the back. He's hearing grunts. He's hearing sighs. And then he begins to hear tearing, ripping, sounds that tailors don't like to hear. And this guy comes out of the back and he's furious. He says, what are you doing? You're supposed to be you make suits. You gave me a suit for a child. And he looks at him, and literally every seam, everything is ripped. He literally ripped the whole thing. He says, this is ridiculous. Don't you know what you're doing? I need to have this would fit a kid. This suit doesn't fit on me. And he looks at the villager and he says, you idiot. You gotta take your coat off first. That's what we all do this time of year. That's what we all do this time of year. We all really want to change. We're good. We want to do something better next year. Are we going to keep it? You know what? We do the best we can. Our goal this year is to make the commitments and to try to change something, to move forward. What do? I go into the store. The store of things I could do this year. And it includes this and that and this chumrah and that new thing I could take on. And I go in and I start grabbing stuff. What is something new I could do this year? What's something I could do? But the problem is that we have these heavy coats that are the real issues that we have with our personalities, the real challenges that we have as people. And it's much more attractive to take a new suit, to take a new thing. I'm going to try something new at my Shabbos table. Gavaldik, great. I'm going to try to focus a little more. Terrific, do that too. But got to take off your coat first. What is that dirty coat that each and every one of us is wearing? What's at the core? What do we really have to change? It's so much more attractive to take on a new suit, to take on something new. But underneath, we have a heavy coat of averos, a heavy coat of character traits that need to be changed. We have to go for the core. The reality is we're not going to change very many things. I mean, I always try to make a list of things, and I start thinking about what I have to change. I come up with like 15 things. Then I say, Mark, this is ridiculous. You're not going to change 15 things. So like, let's pick 5 things. And then I realize I'm not going to change 5 things. This is not going to happen. I can't keep focused. I always try to change 3, and that's not really possible. I try to make a little acronym for myself so that I'll say it every morning. These 3 letters are the things I'm going to change. That lasts for like 2 days. You got to pick maybe one thing we could focus on. What is the one thing that each and every one of us really needs to change? If you look at the source sheet, I want to share with you something that's disturbing, but I think very important to remind ourselves of. Rabbeinu Bachya says at the beginning of the Torah, Ya'an ki ha-Torah kula b'midos ha-adam niksheres. all of the Torah, everything that's going to follow. This is on Bereishis, Perek Aleph, Pasuk Aleph. You want to read the Torah, you want to know what it is, let's understand. Everything in the Torah is built upon our characteristics, our midos. Kihem chomer lemitzvos. It's really not about this particular halacha and that particular chas v'shalom. It's all important. But the basis of everything are our characteristics, our character traits. The Rambam says in source number 2, Al Tomar, don't say. Now obviously if the Rambam starts a phrase with don't say, then people are saying this, right? Don't say She'ein tshuva ela me'averos she'yesh bahen ma'isa. Don't think that the only thing that we can and must do tshuva for are things that have particular actions. Kigon znus v'gezel u'gneva. He picks some pretty big ones. I hope nobody here is responsible for any of those. But don't say that. Obviously, there's a reason to think that that tshuva is about changing my actions. He says, don't think that tshuva is only for actions. Ela kashem shetzarech adam lashuv me'elu. Just like we have to do tshuva for those things. Kach utzarech lechapes bedeos ra'os sheyeshlam. A person needs to stop in the dark for a few minutes and think about what they're... How do you translate that word? Deot? Ra'ot. Bad thoughts. So I would think thoughts here mean like heretical thoughts. Deot, right? But we all know the Rambam's Hilchot Deot. He has a whole section of the laws of Deot. He doesn't talk about heretical thoughts. Vilashuv min haka'as. Uh-oh. This is not the stuff I wanted to work on this year. I wanted to take on that chumrah, you know, the top challah, the bottom challah. Which one do you got? Kigol hashuv min hakas. There's also tshuva for anger. Umin ha'eva and hatred. Umin ha'kina and from jealousy. Umin ha'hitul and from making fun of things. And then he gets even worse. Umiridifas hamamon v'hakavod. And from running from greed and running after honor. Umiridifas hama'acholos. Oh my God. Umiridifas ma'acholos. I got a diet now too? Who has time to diet? I'm doing tshuva. I'm running after food. First of all, don't you know, God, how many holidays you put in this time of year? How is that possible? Maybe that's why Yom Kippur is a fast day. At least that day, I can't be running after food. What? Seriously? I'm busy doing tshuva. I'm looking up stuff in the Shabbos book to find out how to do so. I'm not making fun. Chas v'shal. These halachas are so important. But that's what I thought tshuva was. I thought tshuva was actions that I did. And the Rambam says there's also tshuva for the core things that are wrong with us. And there's so much wrong with us. All of these character traits. Min hakol tzarech lachzor b'tshuva. I have to do tshuva for all of these things. And then he says something which is really scary. Ve'elu ha'avonos kashim me'otan sheyesh bahen ma'isa. And not only do I also have to do tshuva for these things, but these averos, getting angry is worse than an action that I do of an avero. Being jealous, being greedy, not being able to control my urges, that's actually worse and more in need of repair. Oy, that's not what I was thinking of doing now. I'm busy doing tshuva. I'm busy saying slichos. Who has time now, this time of year, to work on my anger problems? Now? Rambam says we also have to do tshuva for these things and they are more important. kashin. We'll see what that word means. They are kashin from the other things. That's the real problem. Why are they kashin? Shebizman she'adam nishka ba'elu, because when we're stuck in jealousy and anger, kashehu lifrosh mehem. It's so hard to change these things. It's so very hard to change these things. You want me to stop an action? I could stop an action. Or at least I could say that I'm stopping the action. Sometimes the way we do tshuva is, I just cold turkey. That's it. I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm not going to do this action anymore. I can control that. I can quantify that. But I'm not going to get angry anymore. I'm not going to I'm not going to be angry. I'm not going to be jealous. What does that mean? The Rambam says that these are the most difficult things to change. The most difficult things to change about us. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter said that it could take 25 years to change a midah. And we're asked to do that in the short time before Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. How do we do this? What is this chiddush of the Rambam? Why would I have thought that I don't have to do tshuva here? And how am I supposed to do tshuva for something that I can't really control? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, who was known as such a great Talmud Chacham, I had the schus to learn with him, to sit at his feet, was also a person of tremendous, tremendous control. He's the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva at Har Etzion. He's the Rav's son-in-law. He taught first in YU and then in the Gush. And he also taught, Baruch Hashem, all the years in YU Smicha program in Beit Vegan. So Rav Lichtenstein discusses this issue at length. And like a Brisker, he takes this to a question. Why, he says, does the Rambam think? Why would you have thought? The Rambam says, Al Tomar, don't say. So why would I have said it? Why would I have thought that I don't have to do tshuva for anger? That I don't have to do tshuva for jealousy? Why? So the first suggestion that Rav Lichtenstein makes is that maybe I would think I don't have to do tshuva for it because I can't. I can't do tshuva for it. How can I? What does that mean? How can I stop that? You don't want me to act on my jealousy? Okay. You don't want me, you want me to do less when I'm angry? You want me to cover my mouth and not yell at my family member when I'm angry? Okay. That's hard. But wait a minute. You're telling me not to get angry in the first place? That's just who I am. What do you mean? That's a natural reaction. The Torah speaks about actions. I have to control my urges. But I'm not supposed to have certain urges at all? The Rambam says, Al Tomar, don't think you can't change that. And we'll give examples later of how perhaps to change some of those things. Number two, I might think, very similarly, that even though I perhaps can change those things, I don't have to, because really all that matters is what goes on from me and forward. I'm burning up inside. But as long as I don't do anything, maybe that's wonderful. In fact, finally, Rav Lichtenstein suggests, maybe that's preferred. Maybe I'm a tzaddik for that. Now the Rambam does say something like this in the Shmona Prakim, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos. He says there are certain averos we're supposed to want to do. There's some averos you're not supposed to want to do. If someone says, I'm a very big tzaddik, I'd like to murder my next door neighbor, but I'm holding myself back. That's not good. If it's a mitzvah sichli, if it makes sense, if everybody knows that's a bad thing. But there are certain urges that I have that are normal. And on some level, some things are we're supposed to want to do an Avera, but I'm not going to do it. I'm going to hold myself back. So I think that attitude applies to everything. Jealousy and anger. Maybe it's actually better if I get angry, but I don't act. What a tzaddik. I am burning up inside. The Rambam says, Al Tomar. Al Tomar. Is it natural to want to eat? Yes. Is it natural to want to stuff myself? That has to be fought against. There's a limit to how much I'm supposed to want. There are characteristics that are just bad. And that's what I have to work on. And why are these things so difficult? So some explain the Rambam to mean that what's so difficult about these things is that they're natural. I don't think before I get angry. I just get angry, right? I don't think before I get jealous. That's just like, what's wrong with being jealous? It's fascinating that the Rambam uses the word deot. Deot ra'ot. Now, of course, when dealing with the Rambam, who was also a philosopher, we have to be careful about how we translate words, but deot literally means ways of thinking. Is it possible that some of these bad midos that I think are just natural, and of course they come, are actually based on skewed ways of looking at the world? I may not be able to control my emotions, but what if my emotions are rooted in faulty ways of looking at the world? If anyone here is a cognitive behavioral therapist, CBT, there are a lot of emotions that are based ultimately on the way. Let me give you an example. The famous, famous comment of the Ibn Ezra by Lo Tachmod. Lo Tachmod, the Torah tells me I'm not supposed to covet. I'm not supposed to covet this woman. So the Ibn Ezra says, what does that mean? How am I supposed, what does it mean? It's not saying that I'm not allowed to do anything. I'm not allowed to approach the woman. I'm not allowed to covet. I'm not allowed to say, wouldn't it be wonderful to be married to her? How am I supposed to control that? And he gives the famous example of the peasant who sees that the queen, the princess Sari, is passing by. And he doesn't actually covet being married to this woman, because it's not a Disney movie and these things don't really happen. And he understands intellectually that it's not going to happen. He may notice that she's beautiful, he may notice that she's wealthy and she's the princess, but he's not actually going to think about. He's not going to have a level of coveting because he knows off limits. Jealousy. What's jealousy? Jealousy, at the root of jealousy, is why does that person get it and I don't? I deserve that. Why does God give, there's no justice, why does God give that person? Jealousy is an emotion, but it's rooted in a de'a ra'a. It's rooted in a way of thinking that it's not fair. Instead of being happy for that person that they have a beautiful home, it bothers me. Why are they there? As opposed to saying, God knows what he's doing. De'ot ra'ot. What we think are justified emotions are so often based in a faulty way of looking at the world. I want to give you an example, something I try to do with anger. You know, sometimes people just do rotten things, right? They do rotten things and we get angry. And it's very natural to think that, why am I angry? Because this person did a rotten thing. What we have to realize is most often the reason why we're angry at someone is not because they did something rotten, but because they did it to me. And I justify my anger by saying, "Oh, that was terrible. What a terrible thing to do." You know what I try to do when someone does something terrible to me? I try to say the following. What if they had done it to a stranger? and I witnessed it,
would I still be angry?
I wouldn't be impressed.
I wouldn't want to be that person's friend. But I would realize that my anger is not because of the act that was done, but because the person had the chutzpah to do it to me. That changes anger.
I'm angry because I'm a special person and I'm a big shot, and how dare they do it to me?
I see them doing it to somebody else. It doesn't bother me. Why is there no anger?
Obviously, it's not the action itself, but a de'a ra'ah. It's a certain way of looking. I think it's just a response to what happened, but it's not. I'll give you a better example. Kids playing in the living room, bouncing the ball. Shabbos afternoon, family's talking. Adults have no idea how boring it is to be a kid at a Shabbos table when there's a three-hour meal. And the kid's there, he's bouncing the ball. And the parent says, oh, don't play in the living room. How many times did I tell you not to bounce the ball in the living room?
So you know what that does. That gets him to move a step forward. He's not going to stop bouncing.
So now then he starts playing handball. I'm not bouncing the ball. I'm playing handball. So I'm playing handball against the wall. I'm starting to pitch against the wall. And this is a very wealthy family. There's a beautiful, beautiful vase. And the vase is on a pedestal. And the kid is bouncing the ball. And the parents are trying to have conversation because only the adults really matter. So they're talking to the adults at the table. And they keep looking over the kids and stop it. Stop it. And the kid just starts to really wind up. And he winds up, he puts his head over, and he throws the ball, and he hits the vase. And the vase just breaks into smithereens. And the parent screams, I told you not to do it, I'm so mad at you! Now, why is the parent mad? Because the kid didn't listen, right? It was terrible. That's not why the parent's mad. What if the kid missed the vase? Just 3 inches to the right. Same pitch. He threw and missed the vase. The parent's upset, but not nearly as upset. You hit the vase? Oh. Why is the parent so upset? The parent should be shepping nachas. The kid could pitch. What's the big deal? Why are you more angry at the kid when he hits the vase? It's the same. The kid's not listening whether he hits the vase or he doesn't hit the vase. I'm angry because I lost my vase. I'm not angry because of what the kid did. Otherwise, I'd be just as angry whether he hit it or not. So many of our traits are rooted in de'ot ra'ot. We're convinced that we're justified in feeling that way. But very often they come from a certain way of looking at the world. So one reason why they're kashin, it's because they're so hard to change. It's so hard for us to break out of our mindset. The Meiri says in source number 4, La'olam yehe adam zaher b'midosav, another idea. The Meiri explains, Shehein hein ha-mevios l'gufe ha-averos o ha-zechuyos. The Meiri explains that the reason why character traits are so much worse is because that's what leads to everything else. They're not kashin because they're hard to change. They are hard to change. But you know why they're so bad, these midos? Because they lead to so many things. Why should I be going after the little details when the root causes of so many problems? I'm lazy. I'm an angry person. I'm a disgruntled person. That leads to so many mistakes that I make every day. Why am I just shooting for the little things on the outside? Rav Chaim Vital says in source number 5, Rav Chaim Vital tries to explain, I'll do this outside with you, why it is that there is no Avera, for example, to get angry. There's no pasuk in the Torah that says I don't get angry. Maybe it's not an Avera. He says there are certain things that are more fundamental than Averos. There are certain things that you can't even talk about, should I do right or wrong, if your head isn't straight. If you don't have midos, you can't even begin to keep the laws of the Torah. You have no chance. For example, there's a debate amongst the Rishonim as to whether or not there's a mitzvah to believe in God. Mitzvah? Of course there's a mitzvah to believe in God. But some explain there's no mitzvah to believe in God. If you don't believe in God, there's nothing to talk about. There can't be a commandment to believe in God. In fact, it's circular. If you believe in God, then there's a Torah. There's certain things that are so fundamental. These are kashin. Why am I shooting just for the details when I should be going for the things themselves? And finally, there's an amazing, amazing Rambam. If you go to source number 7 on the back, the Gemara tells us that hirhure aveira, wanting to do an aveira, thinking about, dreaming about an aveira, is worse than doing an aveira. And that's very counterintuitive. Right? A lot of aveiras we want to do, we don't do them. Why would it be worse to think about the aveira than to do it? The Rambam says, v'li perusho, perush niflama od. The Rambam sometimes pats himself on the back. You see this? He says, I got a grape shot here. This is an unbelievable thing I'm about to say. Listen closely. V'hu sheha'adam kishiyamreh, amnam yamreh mitzad hamikrim hanimshachim achar hachomer shelo. When a person makes a mistake, when a person rebels against God and he does an action, he does it, listen closely, with his or her body. And how holy are our bodies anyway? We have urges, we're human beings, we're material. I mean, how special are our physical bodies anyway? So my physical body did an aveira. She'adam lo yaseh meri rak bebehemiusio. When a person does an aveira, it's their physical urges that drew them away. Aval hamachshava hi misgulo sa'adam hanimshachos achar tzuraso. But your mind, our spirit, that's the holiest part of us. My body makes mistakes. But how dare I sully my soul? The Rambam says that when I actually do the Aveira, my physical body is doing physical stuff. That's what bodies do. But when I desire the Aveira, that's my soul, my conscience. That's me. The real me is not my body. The real me is my mind, is my soul. And when I desire an Aveira, I'm actually sullying the real me. When I do an Aveira, I act in a certain way. Explains Rav Lichtenstein, when I get angry, I am an angry person. I'm not a sinful person. The word chait means to miss the mark. I blew it today. I couldn't control myself. But am I an angry person? Am I a jealous person? Am I a person who covets? Is that? That's the essence of who I am. They're kashin. It's one thing to make a mistake with my body. I messed up. I'll do better. But it's at the core of who I am. It's a very, very scary Gemara. Last year we spoke, I hope I didn't spook you out too much. You invited me back. It couldn't have been so bad. But I spoke last year about life after death. There's an incredibly scary Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara talks about the story of Achav and Navot HaYisraeli. Yisrael is a region up in northern Israel. There was a king, his name was Achav. There was a queen, her name was Jezebel, Izebel, the worst, the worst. What was their crown moment? When were they the worst? So one day, King Achav is walking out and he sees this field and he says, I wish I could have that field. And he makes this fellow, his next door neighbor, his name is Navot. He says to Navot, can I buy your field? And Navot says, you know, this is my ancestral field. I'm not selling this. And poor Achav, poor King Achav, who has almost everything in the world, comes home at the end of the day. And he's very, very sad at the dinner table.
And his wife, Yizebel, says, "What's wrong, honey?" And he says, "Well, there's this field, and I made a nice offer for it, and he wouldn't give it to me." And she says, "You fool, you're the king. You could do anything you want. I'll take care of it." And they come up with a crazy charge against Naboth, and she rigs the jury, and he's tried, and he's killed. And it seems that not only is he killed, but his descendants are killed, and now there are no kids to take over this land. And she says, "Here, honey, happy birthday. I got you the field." And the Navi comes to them and says that this is the final straw, Yizebel and Ahab. Because of this, your whole line is going to go down. You're going to lose the kingdom. Here, as time goes on, it's now the time to carry out the punishment on Ahab. Listen closely. And a heavenly voice goes out. This is actually written in the Navi. It's very strange. It's actually written in the text that there are things going on in the next world. And a voice comes out and says, "We need Ahab to go to war, and he's going to fall at war. Who's going to trick him into going into war against that army? We're going to need someone to convince a false prophet. Someone's going to have to go down and put something in the mind of a false prophet. That false prophet is going to go to Ahab. Ahab's going to be fooled. Ahab's going to die on the battlefield. Who wants to do this? Who wants it?" So the text says a spirit, a ruach, comes and says, "I'm in. I'll do it. I will go and plant the seed in the mind of a false prophet. He will go tell Ahab. Ahab will listen to him. Ahab will die on the battlefield." And the pasuk says that a ruach, a spirit, came and said, "I'll do it." And God says, "Say, go out and do it. Let's get him." And the Gemara says, "What does the word say mean? Go out?" The Gemara says, "Tzei mimechitzati. You can do this, but it's going to cost your place in Olam Haba." A spirit came from Gan Eden and said, "I'll volunteer to bring about the death of the king of Israel." God said, "Great. But even though Ahab is deserving of punishment, you're going to have to pay for planting this lie in the head of the false prophet. Tzei mimechitzati. I want you," it's such a strange concept, "I want you to do this. Someone has to take be a korban. Someone's going to have to go and do it. You go do it." He says, "Fine, I'll do it. And in exchange for that, I will give up my place in the world to come." Says the Gemara, "Who is that ruach? Naboth HaYisrael." Naboth, who was killed by Ahab, is seething with anger, wants vengeance, and says, "I'll give up my place in the world to come if I can get back at Ahab." Listen to what the Gemara is saying. Naboth HaYisrael is not alive. I understand if he's alive. He doesn't know the truth. He hasn't been in Olam Haba. And he's overcome by his terrible... We want to take vengeance. We want to do this. But Naboth HaYisrael is in Olam Haba already. And so is his anger. So is his anger. So is his desire for vengeance. It's so much a part of him that it goes to the next world with him. And even though he's seen the truth already, and he knows what Olam Haba is, and he knows that this world isn't so important, he's willing to give it all up. Because he's a vengeful person, it turns out. So scary to imagine that the bad character traits that we have will go with us to the world to come. That's why they're kashin. Because it's not a mistake that we made. It's the essence of who we are. It is so hard to stop. But if not now, ladies and gentlemen, when will we make these changes? It's so hard to work on our character traits, but we're not going to do it in March. We're not going to do it in the summer. We're not going to do it Hanukkah time. There's only one time of the year that we focus on changing ourselves.
The Rambam says, he begs us to consider changing our core midos, our core characteristics, the root, everything, not just what we do, but the essence of who we are. Give me 2 minutes just to share one more thought. Because the reality is, we were here to talk about priorities in tshuva, so I moved you from one big category to another big category. Okay, so don't only look for a chumrah over here, look to your midos. But I got so many bad midos. So how am I going to choose which midah? Right? And I'm going to make a list of 10 midos that I'm going to change, which is a wonderful way to make sure that I change none of them, because I'm not going to focus on it. So I just want to share with you source number 8. Source number 8 is something that really, literally changed my life when I saw it. It literally changed my life when I saw this source, this idea by Reb Tzadok HaKohen. He writes, how do I know what I should change? How do I know what I should focus on? Kol echad yodea shebema sheyitzro tokfo biyoter, the thing that I am the worst at, the biggest problem that I have, the biggest aveira that's part of my essence, hu kli muchan leotam dvarim biyoter liyot nikiyim vizakim etzlo. The thing that I am worst at is the thing that I can and must fix more than anything. And Reb Tzadok goes on to explain that it's not just that there's mida keneged mida. I was very bad, so now I should try to be good in that area. I should try to fix it. Reb Tzadok HaKohen says that the thing that we are worst at, our biggest problem, could very well be why we're here. It could very well be that our mission in life is to fix the thing that is most difficult for us, and that's why we struggle with it. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu give me so much of this? Why is it, Lefi, towards the bottom, Shahu Kli Muchan Laholid? He talks about the fact that sometimes you'll have a father and a son. He talks about the father Achaz. Achaz was a king of Israel who got rid of all the Torah learning in Israel. And his son, Chizkiyahu, brought Torah learning back to the world. So that they said that everybody knew, so the little kids, everybody knew Shas, everybody knew everything. Why? Because the thing that's our biggest challenge, the thing that we inherit that is our biggest challenge, is specifically what we're supposed to fix. Achaz got rid of all the Torah. It was in the blood of the family that somebody could either erase Torah or bring it back. It's in my blood that either I could be an angry person or I could be a person who is the most even-tempered person. Maybe the biggest problem that I have is what I'm here for to correct. Maybe God gave me a challenge that I'm a very jealous person. You know what we all do? We all have one thing about ourselves for which we give ourselves a pass. There's always that one thing that's the way I am. I can't fix that. There's always something. There's something about us that we know and everyone can identify. There's one thing about us that is the worst trait that we have, and it's specifically there that we say, let my judgment in heaven start after that's been put aside. That's just me, but... Says Reb Tzadok HaKohen, why do you think you have that? Because that's what God wants you to focus on. It's not a distraction to the tshuva process. That is the tshuva process. What's the thing that I am worst at? That's what I need to go for. That's not pulling me away from everything else.
That could be what I'm here for. We all think we're here to accomplish some tremendous mission in the world. We don't know why we're here.
Our rabbis tell us that each one of us is here to do something different. Very often we all want the same great things. I want to be a person who founds institutions. I want that to be, that's what my tafkid must be. It could be that what I'm here for is to show that a person can overcome jealousy. To show that a person who's naturally, who started as an angry person, can develop an even temper. Could that be what I'm here for?
Very often we look everywhere else to figure out what it is that we should change and what we should be. And the answer is staring us in the face. I remember at the beginning of my rabbinate, there's a boy who was learning in Eretz Yisrael. He's a tremendous mind. He had left my community. I developed a relationship in the 1 year that I was there. He went to Eretz Yisrael for several years. And he was convinced that he was going to be a Rosh Yeshiva. And he really could have been. I mean, he was a tremendous mind. He was learning in a top yeshiva. And as time went on, he began to struggle with a mental health issue. And he just couldn't put it together in the yeshiva. And I remember him coming back and sitting in my study and crying how this mental health challenge was getting in the way of his tafkid. He was supposed to be a Rosh Yeshiva. He's supposed to be accomplishing all of this. And now he has trouble getting out of bed in the morning. I said to him, who said your tafkid is to be a Rosh Yeshiva? Maybe your tafkid is to get out of bed. Maybe you're here to show that somebody can struggle with mental illness.
Ah, but that's a tafkid for a guy like me. What we're here for is often staring us right in the face.
The biggest challenge that we have in our life, we need to embrace. We need to stop pushing it aside. We need to stop making excuses. We need to stop thinking of other things that the tshuva process in our life is about. Take on your chumras. Say your slichos. Do everything for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. But let's find the one biggest challenge that we have and say, maybe that's why I'm here. To show that I can embrace that and I can change it.
That the thing which is my greatest challenge is, as Reb Tzadok says, a kli muchan. It's ready. It's staring you. You want to know what you're here for? Admit it. Look inside. That's what we have to change. And says the Rambam, Al Tomar, don't say it can't be changed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the strength to change the things that we need to change the most. Спасибо всем, кто